Dun, 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 dun.
Boom, boom.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to season four, The Wicked Years. I'm Tara.
And I'm MK. And we are your hosts of Down the Yellow Brick Pod, a Technicolor Pod Squad community devoted to preserving and peeling back the curtain on the wonderful world of Oz.
This season, though, we have developed an allergy for water, but definitely not one for high broom belting, because we are deep diving with Gregory Maguire's 1995 revisionist exploration, unveiling a corrupt land of Oz in Wicked, the life and times of the Wicked Witch of the West, including the subsequent series to follow, and of course...
The 2003 blockbuster Broadway musical of the same name, currently being adapted into a two-part film for release in November 2024. Do you know about it?
Consider this your Green Girl prerequisite course to soothe the long, long waits.
Off the pod, feel free to follow our Insta at Down the Yellow Brick Pod for a visual companion, as well as our Patreon Pod Squad, where we continue the escapism and entertainment with a range of bonus content, including exclusive episodes, musical covers, monthly hangs, and behind-the-scenes vlogs.
As a community-funded podcast, our patrons are truly our backbone, our people, so consider joining our rainbow of a pod squad today. More perks and live events coming soon. Patrons are the first to know.
Now, may the world of Oz continue to be a bewitching escape in bewildering years, nostalgic and nuanced, and a magical refuge where two gals living in New York City can defy gravity with wonders like you.
Ain't no one gonna bring us down, baby.
Bree is a New York-based playwright, dresser, and avid Wicked fan. Bree recently graduated with a BFA from NYU, having studied playwriting and costume design. She has worked primarily in the costume field on shows such as K-Pop Broadway, Bad Cinderella, and Shucked. She also interned with Wicked's costume designer, Susan Hilferty. Her love for Wicked began at the age of 14 and has only grown with the help of TikTok, where she continues sharing her love with the internet.
Hello, dear listeners. Welcome back to Down the Yellow Brick Pod. MK here, and I'm so excited. I'm joined by, as always, bestie Tara.
What is my name today?
Yeah, who are you?
What is my screen name?
I never asked for this.
I was like, what did I choose? I can't even remember.
Never. Listeners, Tara labels her name on Zencastr, like on theme with every episode. It won't let me change mine, so mine is boring. But
that's who I am today. I never asked for this.
I never asked for this.
You could speak it, you could sing it. You choose.
You could see how you're feeling. You could really choose different levels.
Keep going. I'm already being an idiot.
We could talk about this forever. Well, I'm glad to be here with you, Tara. And we're joined by a very, very special guest. Co-host, Wicked fan, Wicked aficionado, Broadway Con panel host. I am so excited. Thank you for being here. Bree Leftwich, welcome
Hello.
To the pod.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Woo!
Excited. We're so,
so excited to have you. This is going to be so fun to have you for this scene where we're going to dive into the song Wonderful, some big reveals. This is like a very dramatic, big plot change that happens in the musical. We, of course, have a little reprise of a song. So before we get into all of these details and our little icebreaker question, Bree, since I know you have a deep, lengthy, long, passionate history with Wicked, can you just give us like your extended elevator pitch of your,
your timeline, your Wicked life? Sure. So I actually went to this theater camp, like many, many theater kids. And
never heard of them.
My first year there, we had actually gone to see Wicked in Philly. So this was like my touch point with all theater.
Academy
and I was
music.
Like, yes, at the Academy. And it's coming back in like next month. I'm so excited. But yeah, I was 6 years old. They took us on a bus to go see Wicked in Philly, and I didn't remember a single thing about that show. The only thing I remembered was like the set from As Long As You're Mine and like Nessa standing, but nothing else. Just literally her getting out of the chair. That was it. Oh, and then
you remember, I went to this little person in a theater.
Yeah, and I went to this camp for like maybe 5, 6, 7-ish years.
Wait, Brie, what's name of the camp? Because I'm from
It was called Ritz Theater Camp in Oakland, New Jersey.
I know all about the Ritz, baby. I was a Philly girl for a bit.
Yeah, I love the Ritz. They are
the Ritz.
They mean a lot to me.
Amazing.
But yeah, I went to this camp for like 7-ish years, and my last year, one of my counselors who was like a camper with me, she was like, you know, you're the only camper still here that was a camper when I was. And I was like, oh, that's so crazy. She's like, yeah, we saw Wicked together there too. And I was like, oh, did we? Is that the show we saw? She's like, yeah. I was like, okay. And so I like went home and I like looked up Wicked on YouTube, and I found a bootleg with Cary Elwes and Aaron Tveit, and I watched it, and slowly all of these memories came back and like all these like touch points in my life, because obviously Wicked is this like big musical. And so it just has been through in my life, my entire life, because I was a theater kid, and I was like, oh my God, wait, all these moments are from Wicked. That's crazy. And then I was hooked ever since. And I watched that bootleg maybe 100 times, and I would force everyone to watch that bootleg with me. My mom would like braid my hair, and I was like, we're watching the bootleg, mom. Yeah, and then I saw it for the first time on Broadway in 2015, and ever since I was hooked. So that's my Wicked journey.
And how many times have you seen it, Brie?
Yeah,
right now we're at 47.
47.
We're gonna hit 50 on Wicked Day. We have timed it.
Oh my gosh!
Yes. We have timed it. We have planned.
My friend and I
are on like Wicked hiatus, and we are struggling.
Yeah, like a fast. Yeah, you're on like a
you
fasting.
You can't see it.
Because I saw it. I think I saw it at the beginning or at the end of August with some of my other friends, and I was like, "This is my last time before Wicked
Day." I'm cutting myself off.
Well, What was so cute when we popped on into this little room together while we were waiting for M, you were like, my Wicked friends. I was like, my Wicked friends.
My Wicked friends.
I love that.
I have so many group chats. So many.
Wait,
so
that's
many.
So cute.
They have so many different names. We actually have a group chat called Sentimental Children. Because my friends and I love The Sentimental Men, and so
we
make this group chat after we listen to an episode. We chat about
Sentimental Children.
Yeah.
Do they know that? Like, I think they should know that there is a group chat called
Kevin, Quincy,
Children.
If you're listening,
shout out.
I am a sentimental child.
Others. You need like a shirt. Sentimental descendants. Amazing.
Yeah, that's what the sentimental fans are called. I think we should call them the sentimental children.
I also got excited because you were saying you're from like outside of the Philly area. I lived there and taught a lot. So I was like, oh my God, if I taught you. That's why I was were you in my camps? Because I taught, I was the walnut camp teacher.
I never went to the walnut.
It's okay. All good. Yeah. I was just like, maybe she was one of my students because this has happened before.
That would have been
crazy.
In theory, I am.
Bria's like, I had this camp counselor who...
I don't remember. I couldn't... You know, I honestly wouldn't be surprised because I definitely have had a counselor named Tara before, so...
Oh my gosh, stop.
It's you.
Her. It's her. Go and hunt her and find her. That's incredible. Yeah. Well, listeners, we became huge fans of Brie at BroadwayCon this year because you were hosting the Fandom Wicked panel where you got to talk to actors and actresses who have been in the show, tour, Broadway, currently in the show. What was just like a brief highlight for you of being a part of BroadwayCon in that way?
Your suit was iconic.
Thank you. Yes. It comes with pants too, so I could have worn those. I guess a highlight of that panel was the fact, I think it was like after everything had happened and I had really like taken it all in. And I was like, 3 years ago, I started making TikToks talking about my love of Wicked. And here I am at a panel at BroadwayCon, which is like the fan central of Broadway. And just like getting to talk to people that I obviously had seen in the shows before and I just like really admired and could talk about like at length, ad nauseum. But like getting to like talk with them after and be like, them being like, that was really great. Like, thank you so much for this. And I was like, oh God, you're thanking me for something I did for you. Like, I think that was the highlight. It's just like that shift of like, oh, I'm like a fan, but I'm also now someone who like can do something with Wicked, which I think is really cool.
Yeah.
I love that.
Really
beautiful.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Oh, that's fantastic. You absolutely rocked it. And it was such a special panel. Mm-hmm. So thank you so much. And we're so glad to have met you.
Yeah,
your very first one.
That was our first one that we went to. And it like,
oh my gosh.
Like it was
set
like
the tone of
set the tone for sure.
I was really nervous that people weren't going to come, but people they showed up. There was a line.
They showed up. They brought their stickers. They passed out their Glinda and Elphaba stickers.
Trading was my favorite
part. They were trading?
Yeah, I traded stickers with a lot of people.
Yeah, it was really
that's so cute.
That was, I was hooked. I was like, it's going to be a great day.
Oh, it's going to be so much fun. I'm so excited. Yeah.
Love it. Well, thank you for joining us for this ep. So a quick, I don't know how quick it'll be, but a little icebreaker for you both.
Okay.
It's a quote from this scene. So just want to gather your opinion. I'm sure we'll get into it as we go throughout the scene. But as we know, Elphaba in the scene goes back. She confronts the wizard and a lot goes down. And so during this scene, the wizard, you know, Elphaba is upset that there's, you know, he's been lying, that there's dishonesty, and the wizard counters back and says this quote, "The truth is not a thing of fact or reason. The truth is just what everyone agrees on. Where I'm from, we believe all sorts of things that aren't true. We call it history."
Where I'm from, Frank Morgan.
Part of that is sung, in case, you know, you're curious. Part of that is sung, part of it is spoken. So just brief thought on that, takeaway, what sort of thoughts or emotions does that spur for you today?
I'll start. That line hit me a lot when I was in high school and I was taking AP history and I was so stressed out. And I just like had to ask myself because, you know, especially with like, I took APUSH, like US history, American US history. And I was so stressed out. And I just remember, like, this is all stuff we learned already, but they told us to unlearn it and relearn it again. And I'm like, how much of this is actually, like, true? Like, how much is it? Yeah. But it just reminds me of my APUSH class in high school and the trauma that was there.
I took that same class. I don't think I crushed the exam.
I did not. My teacher told me
I did.
You were in American history, both of you?
Yeah.
I did Euro. US
history.
I wish I did.
Oh, I did too. I think I got like a 2 on that.
I got a 4.
That was bad. Get it. That was hard.
I got out of history in college. I didn't have to take any history.
I got a 1, and my teacher said to me that following summer, he was like, "What happened on the test?" I was like, "I don't know why you're concerned by this. Like, what did you think was going to happen? I was failing your class."
It's a cram. It's like my brain cannot possibly have space for years of conquering.
Years
of conquering. I just can't. Like, Europe is too big. Yeah. It's too big.
That's a lot of years.
I don't know. I wonder if I would have done better. I like European history more than I like American.
I think I would have reversed, but again, like, I don't know if I would have loved my American history probably at my Middlesex high school. Like, I'm pretty sure I learned probably a whitewashed version of everything. Yeah. That is what I assume. Right. I think my takeaway with this is that it's the line that gets like a chilling response, I think, from the audience. Like, people are always like, ooh, like it gets that like, ooh, that ooh that like you make when you're like, oh, that's truth, right? Like what he just said is true. Because history, like what is history? History is stories. It's storytelling. And like the fact and fiction dance is a tight tango that I think, you know, certain people will dip more on and others will try to stay to the choreography. But most of us are embellishers and whatever, like however we retell our own stories, something always changes. So even just like in our own personal like retelling of our narrative, something shift that maybe weren't what exactly happened, but like memories are all we have. Yeah. So that's all that's left. Cause like I'm reading Joel Grey's memoir right now and I'm like, didn't happen like this, Joel Grey. This is a long time ago for you to be recounting verbatim. You know what I mean? Like, I like you just always, I always think that that's not just Joel Grey. Like, any memoir I read, I'm like, this is a lot for verbatim
you're
moment.
You're seeing things through your own lens and your own perspective, which is
each our own window.
Biased. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what I think this quote nails down, is that we're each our own window. And it is like whatever, whoever agrees upon one thing the most, that's usually what wins. And that's what gets told. Like, that's what we're seeing with Madame Morrible and the wizard when they're deciding what to do next. Yeah. They agree upon that. That's how they're going to move forward. Is it true? No, but is it what's getting action? Yes. Is it what's getting told and putting into text? Yes. So I think that's like, whoever puts down history is, that's a big task. And I know that like brings us back to like Hamilton endings and everything.
I was going to say, but, like, my Hamilton quote.
It's a big task. Like, and that, and getting it right is impossible. It's not, you can't tell the truth because we're all like warped in how we perceive things. So it's a great quote and I love the audience response. And I'm like, this is why Wicked is still on Broadway 20 years later.
It just made me think of like elementary school where you trust adults and you trust your textbooks and you feel there's one version of history and this is the right way, quote unquote. And then you grow up and you realize, like, not that it was all alive, some of it was, but it's more nuanced and there's like 87 versions and everyone has different perspectives. So it just makes me feel like our work learning our history and relearning our history and hearing more stories is really never done.
I just like, remember my teachers like telling me, like, you unlearn what you thought you learned new. Like, vivid memories of middle school and high school. We like, everything you learned in middle school, wrong. Everything you learned in elementary school,
you're like,
wrong.
What are you
I'm
doing
like,
to me?
I'm like, what's the point of telling me that? The first time.
Yeah, we wasted time.
What would be the, okay, here's my question now. If we just started telling kids from jump, this nation, if we're going to go into American history, was founded by invasion and massacre. What is the fear of telling that to little kids? That they're, I feel like we're going to break them later anyways. Yeah. Like, how do we, I guess that's probably what it is, right? Like, we're afraid to tell the true history because it's so vicious and cruel. Yeah. And like, we're founded on a bunch of lies. Like, what is kind of, I did have another thought I'm bouncing around a little bit, but like I'm working on my scheduling with my kids that I tutor right now. And like, we're talking about like the upcoming holidays. No one is saying Christopher Columbus anymore. I noted that. And I was like, wow, like, I think we're finally there where it's Indigenous People's Day. Like, it's coming out of my Upper East Side, Upper Crusty folks. And I was like, wow, if I hear them saying it.
That's a good sign.
That's a really good sign. But like, that took forever for us to like finally be like, whoa, this holiday that we're celebrating maybe is offensive and not the real recollection of the history and does a huge disservice to the nation to a nation of people that were here. So I don't know. Like, what is it? What are we afraid of with just telling the truth to young kids? They can't handle it. I think they can.
Yeah.
They can handle it. I think it's also like, this is what we've done for centuries, or you know, years upon years upon years. So like the fact you said these kids are changing, that's awesome. It also makes me think of, like, you know, not to put anyone on blast, but like the older generations, like are they embracing this, like you know, that sort of change. I could see textbooks and like how history is taught changing. Just like anything else, it's like a small incremental change by change. And like those kids that you're talking about are going to lead the charge for future generations.
Yeah. And also like kids are just really perceptive. They pick up everything. Things you don't want them to know, they know. They know. I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe they can't emotionally process some of it. But yeah, they know. And I don't. Yeah. I think kids could handle the truth more than we think.
Yeah.
100%.
Especially if we emphasize, we do not do that anymore. Like, that is not okay anymore. Yeah,
this is,
you know?
Yeah.
It's also like the way you approach telling someone something as well.
Right.
Yeah. This is why teachers should be paid $1 million a year.
I know. Like, they're literally shaping minds.
Literally shaping minds. And that's why I can't fault some of them for like giving up, because The money ain't there. So I got to.
And it's a big responsibility.
It's a big responsibility. Mm-hmm. Completely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whoa.
Well, thank you for that. I'm sure we'll get more into it as we go, but that line just hit me over the head as I was researching and watching the scene. So thank you both. Thank you, listeners. We will get into the scene and see you on the other side.
Welcome back, everyone. We are transitioning into an engagement party. We are leaving the Wicked Witch of the East Brow. We're leaving her behind. And here we are. Let's break down this scene in some bullets. Oh, I start. I forgot I start. Okay. Bullet point number one. Act two is all about screaming names and transitions as we leave Nessa screaming, "It's Elphaba!" and shuffle over to the engagement party of Glinda and Fiero, the one that Bok wishes he was at the Wizard's Palace, spotting an Elphaba lurking in the shadows, clearly missing her friends, but on a mission. But before she can free the monkeys, she is found by the wizard in his tailcoats, who tries to appeal to her, her loneliness with his loneliness, trying to win her back with a wonderful song and dance, nearly convincing Elphaba. Wicked Witch of the East, bro.
Wicked Witch of the East, bro.
All you breathe.
Okay. This is very my screenwriter came out me a little bit.
Oh.
Momentarily caught up by what could be, Elphaba returns to the gravity of reality. With one condition before she accepts his proposition, Elphaba tells the wizard to set the monkeys free. With a bit of hesitation, the wizard gives in, and at last, a wrong has been righted. The monkeys dance and fly with their newfound freedom, and all seems to be going well, until Elphaba discovers her beloved former professor, Dr. Dillman, not only in the wizard's magicless hands, but without his voice. Furious, Elphaba charges at the wizard, but not before the wizard calls his guards and enters a certain Vinken prince drawn with a rifle drawn. "Fetch me some water," orders Fiero. Elphaba's fears are confirmed. Fiero has changed, but not in the way she thought. For once his guards leave, his rifle changes targets from Elphaba to the Wizard of Oz. He tells her, "I have changed."
Woo! Come on, Brie.
That was great.
Yeah, can you do all our bullets?
Write the pop-up book.
Yeah, write the pop-up book. Like, that was beautiful. All right, I'll bring us home. What's going on? Glinda runs on, elated to be reunited with her long-lost friend Elphaba, grateful she is alive. But quickly, her bubble of hope is burst as Fiero confesses he is going with Elphaba. And that all this time, they've kind of been going behind Glinda's back in a certain sense. They run off with Glinda yelling, "You deserve each other!" The wizard offering Glinda a swig of some green elixir as Morrible runs on, trying to concoct a plan to trap Elphaba. Glinda sharing Elphaba's weak spot is her sister, Nessa. And Morrible comes up with a plan, perhaps a change in the weather, as Glinda saunters in a deserted hallway, singing her own version of "I'm Not That Girl."
Oh, Glinda. This scene is a lot, y'all. Like, there's a lot of turning moments. Like, everyone is culpable in this scene for doing something that is hurtful. I think that's what it is. Like, everyone has hurt someone in this scene.
Yeah, this is true. It's like not a triangle. It's like a...
So it's your fault. It's totally so it's your fault.
Yeah, it's definitely that.
There's like a lot going on into it's your fault. For our folks who are unsure what I just said. I mean, should we do music first?
Yeah, talking music a little bit about music.
Dance or makes the wizard
the
dance?
Music that makes him dance. Okay, so the Grimory tells us about Wonderful. Stephen Schwartz writes, just as a reminder, little blurbs about each song. Stephen tells us, "Wonderful is deliberate pastiche musically. It was the only place in the show I actually wanted to sound like a specific place and time in our world, early 20th century Midwestern America. It's a little bit ragtime and vaudeville. What's really going on in the lyrics, of course, is that the wizard is intellectually seducing Elphaba, who is exhausted and isolated. He's offering her what she desires in The Wizard and I, and he even quotes that music. And Elphaba is enticed by this, that she too could be wonderful and celebrated. This is also the most political song in the show. The wizard talks about how the truth is a lie agreed upon by society. He describes himself as a mediocrity thrust into prominence. That has contemporary reverberations, I think. He also sings what I think is the philosophical core of the show. There are precious few at ease with moral ambiguities, so we act as though they don't exist. In the end, that's what Wicked is about. For whatever reason, people need to look at things in black and white to label one person a villain and another a hero.
I mean, what do you say to that?
Steven.
It's like, yeah.
Steven.
Yes, like, yeah. Stevie.
Stevie!
We have to ask you this now because we had a whole dilemma on our last episode.
Okay.
Yes.
We need help. Our minds have blown open because in Stephen Schwartz's biography, Defying Gravity, mm-hmm. by Carol mm-hmm. DeGraff, he says that there's only been 2 months between Defying Gravity and the start of Act Two. And we're like, yeah. No way.
Absolutely Retell us.
No way.
Okay. I also have gotten in numerous debates with friends about how much time passes.
Glad you're debating. Thank you. No,
literally. Because I've heard like, some outlandish. People are like, it's been 6 years. I was like, no, I can't believe that.
But 2 months.
2 months seems really quick.
Like Nessa to have Nessa's change. That's yeah, like the one that is yeah. the most startling.
Yeah, that's pretty.
And like they all just move shiz and they talk about school like it was this far away time. I'm like, school 2 months ago. You were freshman.
Yeah. I would say minimum like 9 months. Maximum like 2-ish years, 2-3 years.
Like a pregnancy.
Yeah. A pregnancy.
Minimum no. of a pregnancy.
Okay. I like that. I see. I can get behind even like, I think what you said, like my lowest, I think is like maybe a year. I can get behind a year.
I think it also, my like opinion in this also stems from like me being my age right now and like not wanting to like see these characters that I quite literally grew up with age more. Because I have to remember like the first time my touch point with this was like 6, but like my real like
they've always been older than you.
Yeah. My real like memory with this was like 14 years old. So like to see them grow past like college age is like, whoa, that's a little much for me right now, guys.
I always thought Margaret Hamilton was old in the movie. I am not Margaret Hamilton's age in the movie.
Isn't that crazy?
Wow. Yeah.
I believe
she was 36.
I know.
Yeah. Age is strange.
Billy Burke, 50, which is like,
get it, Billy.
Things to look forward to.
Yeah. Yeah, we're good.
But no,
that's a good point, though.
I think like a few years, because I also just think like these characters are just like, at least at the beginning of Thank Goodness in particular, like they're very naive to the ways of like the world, I feel.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know. Like, it's not long enough. It's not too long. Like 6 years, no way. But like at least a year. At least a year.
I also like to believe that Elphaba like became the witch her like sophomore year of college. I don't know. Something about that to me. Like 19 is like something like
That feels like a witchy transition
it's
age.
An Adele album age. I mean
it has to be an Adele title. Okay.
Yeah.
It's an important age.
Well, I don't know. So I feel like a couple years went by. I don't think 2 months. That's so short.
I feel like at first I thought it was much longer, but I agree. Maybe it's a year.
I want to erase it from this book. Like I'm like, why did you put that in here?
2 months. Okay. 2 months is way.
I'm glad to hear your thoughts on that because that it feels insane.
Too short. No, 2 months. No.
Only Crazy. Thing that is in the biography on Wonderful, there's not really a lot on this. And I think I may have read this quote before, but I will repeat it again, maybe back when we did Sentimental Man. Stephen Schwartz said, "The wizard makes a lot of choices that aren't very moral out of personal weakness, but he's not a bad man. He's just someone who had no business being the ruler of of a country. Sound like anyone we know. And then it says here, he was somebody who got caught up in the lavish attention poured on him in Oz and who'd been corrupted by fame. I think that's always an interesting, like, way to look at fame and the, like, it's kind of like, you know, a beast that you have to keep feeding, and the corruption, like, that is something that I think does happen to a lot of people in today's day and age. Schwartz had written Wonderful, in which the wizard can make his case, and Gray's performance could come close to convincing the audience that he was an okay guy, all the while hinting at another layer to his personality. So yeah, the song I do think it's like the thing that will never age with the show.
Mm-hmm.
And like all the music before we get into the song is like all of like Elphaba's themes are coming back. Like there's like that last kind of ditch effort at hope. We get the Unlimited theme is played underneath some of this.
Yeah. Paul Laird brings that up from his incredible book where he dives very deep into all the songs. But yeah, the ballroom transition, which is on the cast recording, opens the Wonderful track. It has themes from No One Mourns the Wicked. And then Schwartz includes the first four notes of the Unlimited motif at the very end. The dance arrangement apparently is by someone named Jim Abbott. Hmm. So shout out there.
Hey, Jim.
Hey, Jim, what's up? And then they refer to Wonderful as this like charm song where, maybe more of a villain is like, hey, come on over. And it sort of calls Professor back to like, have another drink. At the beginning, this very like the theme, the musical theme that Schwartz wrote for The Wizard all sort of tied together. And obviously like served Joel Grey's kind of natural style too.
That man in a tailcoat.
Yeah. Is just give it to us.
Everything. I love that. Like,
works.
How he works. I love that. Like everybody just like whenever they're describing Joel Grey in Wicked, it's like Joel Grey is just Joel Grey. Like there's nothing
else.
He's just Joel Grey. I was like, okay.
Yeah. What else do we say?
It's like, what else?
Mystifying. Well, I'm going to talk a little bit more on Joel Grey just as I'm reading his memoir. And I just gotten so many chills reading his memoir, and like how perfect of a choice he was to be the original wizard is beyond.
Yeah.
So I'll get into that in a little bit.
Yeah.
I love that.
I want to point something out in the transition music at the very beginning. I think the part of No One Mourns the Wicked that plays is the part that goes, and goodness knows. And then the rest of the line tree, like the Wicked's lives are lonely. I just think it's really interesting that Nessa is just standing there. And like, I feel in a way it's like, we know that Glinda sings this part and like, that's like her song, but also the fact that like Nessa looked up to Glinda so much.
Great point, Brie.
I don't know. And then also I feel like that at that point too, we're also questioning like a lot about characters like morals at this point. It's like we're gonna see some things happen in the next scene. I'm like, so good.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Like her Glinda bubble has been shattered too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very true. One last note from Paul's book is just about the reprise of I'm Not That Girl, which I love that it happens. It's so short, but Schwartz has commented how unexpected it would be for the audience to hear Glinda sing Elphaba's song and kind of like hear it from her perspective, as well as there's one very, very small change in Elphaba's version. Don't wish, don't start. Like it's very staccato. And in Glinda's, it's don't wish, don't start. Like there's a
it's written emphasis that way. On
don't.
Oh,
Yeah. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Hmm.
Interesting. Yeah. And she doesn't sing one of the lines.
Yes. There's a typed note. Yeah, there's a note of like, should this be sung? Should this be spoken? So that was definitely taken into account.
What line is it that she does not speak? Don't speak.
Don't speak. I know just one.
The curl?
I don't know.
The rose
don't
and the wish.
Pearl? Don't the start
is
wishing.
So? Is it so?
Wishing only wounds the heart. There's a girl I know. He loves her. So I'm not that girl.
She doesn't sing the rose and the pearl. She doesn't sing that part. That's the part that has a break, right?
Yeah.
I think it's that rose and pearl line.
For Glinda?
Yeah, she doesn't sing it. She lets the music pass.
As
she,
I see what you're saying. Yes. She doesn't sing. There's, it's rest.
I was born for the, is that what it is? I wasn't born for the rose and the pearl. Yeah. Is that the line?
Yeah. It's like that motif that happens. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Amazing. Well,
Gorge.
I can share a little bit about Joel Grey, our favorite.
Please do.
It's also was so fun to watch. So I watched the Chenzel bootleg in preparation and also watched the wizard that I last saw on Broadway, Michael McCormack, who is like a different presence on stage. Like Joel is nimble and like had little claps interjecting into his performance, knows how to use his tailcoat and like his quick and nimble feet, like skittering about on the stage. Like that is the Joel Grey that has been performing since the age of 17, like to impress people. There he is. And then this guy, that's not his thing, but he more so was like captivating in eyes and presence and like small gestures being extravagant, which I was like, cool. Yeah. It's neat to see this number, like almost as if it was the number was a tailcoat, be put on differently by these gentlemen. Yeah. I really appreciate Michael McCormack's performance because it's nothing like Joel Grey. And I think that's always a tricky thing when someone makes a role so iconic or so like they've stitched it with their specialties in it to do something completely different is always hard. And I know it's so funny. Em and I just did our bootleg episode for our Patreon and it was like, what are we doing with the wizards? Like, this isn't the same. Like how their way of singing Sentimental Man is pretty much, they're all kind of in the same ballpark. There's not much crazy differences, but I think it's on the showmanship style is different wizard to wizard, which is cool. But let's bring it back to Joel Grey.
That's cool.
And this is something that that's been giving me chills since we talked about Joel Grey back on our Sentimental Man episode. Just the fact that like his influences are the MGM era that Wizard of Oz became like a household name. Like he's part of that, like growing up underneath that. So just something from his memoir, Master of Ceremonies. This is with his first trip to New York City. He went for an audition with his mother when he was a teenager. The train trip, while exciting and romantic, was nothing compared with arriving in the city that was the epicenter of the American theater. Totally feels like an Emerald City moment for him. In the cab from Penn Station to our hotel, we sped through block after block to theaters, the marquees rising, blinking, and calling out. The first marquee to capture him was By Jupiter, starring Ray Bolger, which is so just like gave a little chill of like, wow, because we sense a lot of Ray Bolger's. Feel in Joel Grey. And there's actually a picture of Ray Bolger and Joel Grey jumping high together in this memoir. So it's just so cool. But here is something I wanted to clear up. Em and I were talking on this last episode about Joel Grey about like not quite understanding the journey of Joel Katz to Joel Grey since he changed his name. We didn't know if it was like a forced assimilation that was put on him to hide his Jewishness. We were unsure. The memoir talks about it, and it's kind of just like that, those old kind of quick showbiz things, like how Frances Gumm became Judy Garland. It's very much in the same ballpark. But so how it all happened was Joel started performing with his dad, and I kid you not, he started performing at the theater Judy Garland was discovered in, the Ebbel Theater that Em and I were at for Judy Garland's 100th birthday, that Wilshire Ebbel Theater. That's where Joel Grey got his performance start on stage doing nightclubs, which is just such like a chill. And he mentions that in his memoir that this is where Judy Garland was discovered. And here's my dad doing these amazing Jewish parody songs. And he's going to step in and join. But he had a big thing that he did not want to have happen, was being introduced as his dad's son. People are going to think I got it because I'm, you know, related to this master of ceremonies, this conductor, Mickey Katz. I want to come out as someone new. So his dad just introduced him as Joel K. Kind of like Danny Kaye, introduced him that way. And that's how he came on out. So pretty, pretty simple. And it's really, really sweet. At the end of the act, this is how he ended the act, Joel's dad, Mickey Katz. Joel's mother thanks you. His brother thanks you. His Aunt Jean thanks you. And I'm his father. And I thank you too. And then the audience would go bananas because they didn't see that coming, which is pretty cool. They didn't know they were related. And then he would later be introduced in the show as the juvenile star of Borscht Capades. That's how he would be introduced. And Joel said, to this day, my brother still kids me about it. Whenever he calls, he asks, is the juvenile star of the Borscht Capades home? Which is just so fun that his brother still brings this up to this day, or at least at the time of this writing of this book. Thought that was interesting. But then how Joel K became Joel Grey is that is super, super simple. He got represented by William Morris Agency once he started to become like huge on the nightclub circuit, getting these spots on Eddie Cantor's show. They just thought it sounded too much like Danny Kaye. They're like, we should change it. And Joel Grey just looks really good. It looks like a name that can go up in lights. So that's how Joel Grey became Joel Grey, Joel Katz to Joel Grey. And then for last thing from this memoir, just it caught me because of the scene that we're in. And it's exactly where I'm leaving off. I'm right now in chapter, I think I'm on page 106 of this memoir. It's really, really good. I mean, his life is wild. He deserves a movie. I'm in chapter 6. Yeah. It's really wild. Especially being someone who knew he was gay from like a very young age at a time where there was just nothing, no language, no exception. It's wild how he moved through his existence and what he learned he had to do to kind of survive and like keep his public image. All of that is wild. But this is fascinating. Okay, so he's becoming this like hotshot on the nightclub scene. Like everyone's starting to notice him. So after one of his shows in a nightclub on Sunset Boulevard, Lana Turner asks for him to come to his table after. And he's just like, oh my God. So just to talk through this interaction, it just kind of feels like this is the wizard's history. Like this would be his history. Okay. So he said, I realized I had to get moving. He was asked by the stage manager, someone backstage, to come, let's go. You got to get to Lana Turner's table. I towel off quickly, remove what was left of my pancake. And oh yes, I put on some pants. And then Miss Turner says, you were just wonderful, up close and personal. And she's saying this to me. Not only was the actress beautiful, but she smelled amazing too. Where do you get all that energy? And so late at night, it just says here in italics, gulp. And he says, I dedicated my show to you. Quick showmanship. Look at him go. Like he's like, the show is for you. He's like literally like maybe 20 years old when this is happening. I hardly noticed that she was sitting with a woman friend until Miss Turner introduced us, adding, we're going to my place just up the hill for a nightcap. Would you like to join us? And then it says in italics, oh, mommy, would I? So he goes up.
Oh, mommy.
He goes up with them. And then he realizes she's been connected to gangsters, that he's like, ooh, I got to get out of here. Like if, because he knows where it's going to go. He like knows this is going to go into like a very long sexual escapade of a night. So he has the nightcap in pieces because he doesn't want to get involved with the mafia, which is a whole other wild subculture that is present here. But like, doesn't that feel like a wizard moment? He's been told he's wonderful like his whole like life and like just keeps it up and he knows how to feed it and like to counter back and to just like be in these exchanges with these hot shots and just play the game, right? So I just wanted to share that because it just struck me, her calling him wonderful and him being like, oh my God, I am
drinking the elixir. I love that. Joel Grey is everything.
This book is wild. I was like, I want to like deep dive on this more because it's wild.
Yeah.
Just the fact, well, I mean, like,
he's got a journey.
Just to peel back even more, like, Ray Bolger was heavily influenced by Fred Stone and David Montgomery, who were the original ever performer duo to do The Scarecrow and the Tin Man in the 1902 musical. So it's just like, whoa, look at this, like, Oz and musical theater culture that exists. And it's interesting that there's like a string that you could easily attach. Like there's pictures of Ray Bolger with Fred Stone. And now we have pictures of Joel Grey with Ray Bolger. It's just, it's so cool. And then like, I was just looking at a picture of Joel Grey with like Cynthia Erivo and being like, look at that. Like, look at those connections, just like tying in from all these generations. It's so cool. Why does this make me so happy? I don't know why, what that is. It just makes me like, oh, you can see, like a legacy. You can see a line. You can see something.
Goes back to Oz.
Yes.
Everything goes back to Oz.
Thank you. This is my point for podcasting, Brie.
Everything goes back to Oz.
Even everything before the year 1900 goes back to Oz. Exactly.
Everything.
Somehow.
Put it in the history books.
They had to be there. Someone had to think about something.
Right.
This Land is of true.
Rainbows. Yes.
I love that. Thank you for sharing that.
Of course. Of course.
M, do you ever wonder what happens to all that stuff when a favorite show closes on Broadway?
Like the sets, costumes, and props?
Yeah, and even the Marley on the floor.
Well, everything is usually struck, disassembled, and packed away to make space for whatever the next show is, the theater becoming an empty, bare space again, almost like it never happened.
Right. Theater comes and goes so quickly. But what if you could take home a little piece of that favorite show's magic with you, your own little piece of theater history?
As the Pink Ladies say, tell me more, tell me more.
I will. Cedary Bags handmakes bags and accessories out of retired theater sets. And 10% of proceeds are donated to introduce students to theater through TDF. We love a good cause even more. You can snag pieces from Wicked, Beetlejuice, Kinky Boots, Dear Evan Hansen, and many more.
What do you mean, Wicked?
Retired Glinda bubble dresses just may be made into necklaces. Boo!
That's amazing!
Last year, they even had ornaments made out of Dorothy's bedroom wallpaper from the MSG tour.
Take all my money. Take it!
We can't urge you more to check out Cedary Bags today to purchase perhaps the most tangible way to feel close to Broadway, especially your favorites that are long gone.
Visit cedarybags.com, linked in show notes.
I have a fun fact for you.
Oh.
Today, I mean, as this episode comes out and listeners are listening, it will not be this day. But the day we're recording, September 27th, does anybody know what that date means in the Wicked universe?
Isn't it their opening date?
It's West End's 17th anniversary today.
Oh, woohoo! Wow. 17.
Kind of cool, right? 17.
They're a kid sister.
They're like, hey, we're here. Like,
remember us?
Not Wicked, sweet 16,
Wicked is in
but
college.
Like, a little more mature. Yeah,
they're in their so dancing. It's their dancing queen era.
I thought that was really sweet. And the wizard, the actor who originated the wizard, is Nigel Planer. I'm not sure if I'm saying his last name right. But he played Wilbur Turnblad in Hairspray. He was the narrator in Rocky Horror Show. He did Doctor Who Live. He was Captain Hook / Mr. Darling in Peter Pan. And he was Grandpa Joe and Charlie in the Chocolate Factory, all on the West End. So I just wanted to give him a shout.
He's a fairy tale old man.
I love him. I'm like, get it, Nigel.
Thank you, Nigel.
Thank you, Nigel, for being here. Thank you. Beautiful. Well, I have a quick little Grand Vizier moment before we break down our scene. I actually just wanted to take a moment and talk about the evolution of Glinda's costumes. And Brie, I feel like you're a great person to have to talk about.
I thought you were
going to
do Elphaba. I'm shook, Em.
Oh, yeah, the dress. I think the dress we should talk about on No Good Deed. Because to me, that's like the iconic dress moment. Even though, yes, the dress is there.
I know. I didn't know she was in it. I know.
Even from the Wicked Witch of the East, she's there. She's in it, but she has like a cape.
Yeah.
And now
yeah.
it's off. I know. I'll say I watched Willemijn Verkijk.
Did you watch her bootleg?
I watched her bootleg for this scene.
I watched her bootleg.
See, she's
it's so good.
So good.
She didn't even sing, and I was like, her acting is everything.
I have notes. I took notes.
Oh, good.
One of my favorite Elphabas.
She's so good.
She's
so good.
Brie is having a moment.
No, because Elphabas, listen, this is a job of actors, but like when they like really get into like those emotions, I'm like, oh my God, stop. Yeah. Don't do that. It's okay. It's going to be fine.
Yeah. No, she is in it. And it's so a good bootleg because you can really see her facial expressions and like her physicality too.
Like HD, baby.
She's
bootleg
shaking.
HD.
She was shaking.
Right. Yeah.
She looks
beautiful in this dress. I mean, this dress is everything, but we'll get into it. I really like the introduction. I think this is the first time we see Glinda's like green slight bubble dress. Cause before she was in kind of the very iconic one shoulder, dress. There's a million YouTube videos on this, but there is one, I believe she plays Glinda in the West End. It's from 2009. Her name is, Diane Pilkington.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it's only like 4 minutes, but she is in, you know, like the dressing area or wardrobe area. And she talks through all the changes. Yeah, yeah. She's near the gondolas because I guess Glinda has 9 costume changes, but there's only 7 costumes. So she kind of talks us through that.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
But
which one does she go back to? Wait, which one does she go back to?
Shiz.
Blue. And the blue. Shiz and the blue.
And the blue. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Makes sense.
But this beautiful, like, I love this dress because it's very subtle in a way, but it also, since we have seen the blue proper bubble version, this is sort of getting us into like that final shape. And Diane talks about like just the evolution of, you know, where she starts, not just color wise, but getting into a more like regal, public facing kind of fashion sense. What are your thoughts on the evolution of Glinda's costumes, Brie?
I think particularly within like this scene, though, I think this is like the first time you truly start to see like Glinda the Good as like a character in a way. I feel like during Thank Goodness, she's still very much trying to figure out how she fits in this like game that the Wizard and Morrible are playing. And I feel like once we get to she plays this the game. Scene and with that transition, we see her like, oh, she knows how she has to act in the position that she is in. And she, we know that there is some drama going on with her and Fiero and all this other nonsense that's happening, but she's like, I'm happy. I'm here. I'm vibing. Everyone look. So I don't know. I think with that. And then I also just like the fact we start to see her take her shape with her costumes. And with this one, and we see the petals in the background on the back of her dress and the bustle. And we start to see this like very regal character for once. We have the tiara for once. We get the first tiara on her. So I don't know. Yeah.
I think it's just so interesting that the costume gets bigger when she loses more.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. Mm-hmm. Like she becomes a bigger presence or like dolls up even more.
Yeah. I was also like, this is my notebook of random Wicked thoughts that I started when I was like 14. So it's old. But I put a note, the very first thought that I have in this notebook is about Glinda's costumes and the colors and how they all play. And I said that green, I wrote that green symbolizes misfortune, jealousy, and safety and betrayal. And I think that I love that it's like a light. She was,
that's so cute. Really,
this is before I even knew I wanted to do costumes too. So I think this is,
You knew.
You were already
analyzing.
I know.
Yeah.
But I also think it's interesting that the green that she wears in this color is this pale. It's like a very like pale.
Yes. Lighter. Yeah.
Compared to, I don't know. So it's also the fact that like the only time that Glinda really wears like true green is during Thank Goodness. And it's like on kind of like she's taking on her own part. And she's like, I really don't want to be a part of this. We don't ever really see Glinda in green other than
cool
greens. Yeah. Because like even on like in pictures and videos, that dress doesn't come off as green. The engagement dress.
It's hard to even tell. You could almost trick yourself into thinking it's like blue.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of I think if I remember correctly, there's a fabric underneath that's actually like more yellow and like has blue patterned on it. I think.
That would make sense.
Brie, do you know why they chose to go with blue for her classic, like blue specifically, other than
copyrights?
Copyrights.
Yeah.
I was wondering, wondering if that like the blue was like, okay, we know we have to avoid copyrights, but why blue? They could have picked anything.
I don't know why. I actually don't. Oh, it was because of sky. Because she wanted her to be more in the
sky.
Season Humphrey wanted to be more in the sky.
Stars in the sky.
Yeah. Okay. Like, is it Munchkinland connected? Because that's their color in Munchkinland.
I mean, I'm sure. I don't know the full story. That's my theory, though.
You're right.
I'm sure.
You are right. That is what Susan has said. And I completely forgot that. So thank you for
That's perfect.
That up. Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. I think it's also interesting, like, I was just pondering bubbles and because this is really like the first time chronologically, I guess, that we start seeing more of this like bubbly shape.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And to me, it's like, it obviously makes me think of like childlikeness and almost like a very glossy, frothy, everything's fine sort of like veneer.
There was an article that someone wrote up on Susan Hilferty and her costumes for that. And I think she said in it that one of the inspirations, I think she asked kids, like, when you think of I forget if it was either a princess or a Linda, like, what do you think of? And they were like this and that. Yeah.
Yes, you're so right. I think that's in the Grimoire too. There's like a mention of this. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's it. Yeah, it very much is like that's for some reason what we think of when we think regal princess queen, like the big full skirt. So just that evolution I found really cool to think about.
I also think it's interesting that a lot of Glinda's costumes are like modern compared to the rest of the like costumes in it, because we all know that like Susan Hilferty's whole thing with Wicked was this twisted Edwardian era, but a lot of like Glinda's costumes tend to fall more into like a more modern, and like that's not really Edwardian in any sense of the word.
Trendsetter.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's Glinda like ahead of the curve fashion.
Yeah. I think she said that it was like 1950s were another big inspiration. We obviously have that Dior dress that the petals come from.
Yes. Yeah. And like the royal family being a huge inspiration and like royal weddings.
Yeah.
I read a whole book. I don't know what possessed me to read this book. I think I was having a Princess Diana moment maybe a couple years ago in the pandemic, as we all do. I think that's
we all go back to every now and then.
And there was an amazing book that came out on like the way the women of the royal family have spoken through clothes, because oftentimes that was their only way to get a message across, and just like how intentional their dress designs would be and like how they would honor certain things. Like some of it is so, it's like their body's like an altar. It's like, this is gorgeous, like how you're honoring certain things. And then other things is like, oh, there's another story happening here that she can't say out loud. Yeah. So fascinating. Yeah, I think Glinda kind of falls into that camp too. Like, Elphaba's in that black, is in black from almost, like, we're in navy blue, but we get to the black. She knows who she is. Like, her fashion doesn't really shift significantly. It just becomes more, I think, confident and emblazoned. But, like, Glinda's, like, figuring herself out through this musical a lot more than Elphaba is.
Yeah.
Yeah, how many costume changes does Elphaba have?
Not as many.
Not as many.
She has the white blazer is the most striking contrast, I think.
Yeah.
Because it's like the only
five?
Not.
She takes off the blazer.
Yeah.
And then. Jumper. Yeah. She takes off the blazer. She puts the jacket on. One short day.
Like black, then, not as fancy black.
Yeah. Then act two. Yeah, five. Like five.
Yeah.
Okay. Nine versus five. Cool. I like that interpretation too, Tara, of like, oh, she's a little bit more like she finds herself. Whereas, maybe Glinda's like, I'm this, now I'm this. It's more of an evolution. Yeah. That's kind of cool to think about.
We know people like this. You will run into people you went to high school with and be like, you are exactly the same. Then you will run into people you went to high school with being like, who are you?
You have changed.
I don't recognize you.
Yeah. It's kind of cool.
The Wizard of Oz is a timeless story, our favorite timeless story, duh, that can be told through every artistic medium under the rainbow.
And that includes Rising Star Makeup Artists' flagship and limited edition Emerald City collection that has put the Wash and Brush Up Company out of business, honey.
From stunning eyeshadows, glowing highlighters, to eye-catching lip care, each product is carefully formulated and packaged to enhance and inspire creativity. All Rising Star MUA products are also vegan and cruelty-free, celebrating an inclusive and conscious community of dream chasers of all ages, backgrounds, and gender expressions. We love to see it.
The Emerald City Collection is a must for any Ozbounder, cosplayer, or fan, beauty and cosmetics lover, or anyone in search of aesthetic magic they can bring to their everyday. Personally, the LTB Oh My lip gloss is a daily go-to and new favorite.
Visit Rising Star MUA at risingstarmua.com, linked in our show notes, for the merry old glow-up you've been waiting for. Here's to our fierce faces looking glam down our yellow brick road.
All right. Well, I love this conversation. I think the time has come to It Was Elphaba transition into breaking down our scene. So I feel like that is such a theme throughout Act Two of like these calling out a name and then there's an underscoring and then we get into the next scene. So we just ended with Nessa Rose yelling, it was Elphaba. We get into scene three. We're at the Wizard's Palace. We get that ballroom transition music that has themes to Unlimited included. And we're at the Wizard's Palace. The guests are dancing. Glinda and Fiero are there. And they look, it says in the stage directions, they look gorgeous and perfectly in love. They're dancing by. Elphaba sort of walks on. Glinda like and Fiero the cake don't toppers. See her. They look like the cake toppers.
The cake toppers yeah. of like yes. a wedding cake.
Those yeah. costumes are on stage for all of 40 seconds.
I know, right?
Breaks Bye. My
I know.
Goodbye.
Come back. I want to see them.
We want to see them. Put them on display.
Yeah.
And then she is in the wizard's throne room, sort of like looking around. She thinks she's alone. And then we hear the wizard, I knew you'd be back. And she's startled and sees the wizard. And he says, just hear me out. I don't want to harm you. And in the stage directions, it says fiercely. Elphaba mm-hmm. is like not here to play. And in the bootleg I watched of, I'm sorry, say her name again.
Villamine.
The bootleg I watched of Villamine. Just her physicality in this. She's like crouched over. Like she's almost yeah. like animalistic here. She says, you have harmed me. Mm-hmm. The wizard says, I know that. I regret it. He's trying to kind of appeal to her, come towards her. And she says, stay where you are. And this is where she brings up the monkeys, which as we've discussed in our timeline, that's been sort of our hangup of like, these monkeys have been sort of imprisoned here.
This is where I want 2 months. This is where I want 2 months.
Yeah. Is the monkeys. 2 weeks. Yeah. Like, yeah. Cause yeah, this is what only brings her here.
Yeah.
I'm setting those monkeys free.
Doesn't feel like she'd wait that long.
Right.
There's a later line that, well, at the end, when the wizard says, like, how well she eluded us last time. I don't know why. I always thought that that wasn't a reference to defying gravity. I don't know.
Another time.
I feel like it was
another attempt.
Yeah.
That could be.
I prefer that.
I like that. I just feel like it's not, Elphaba wouldn't. Wait, she would try.
Maybe she has tried.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Maybe this is like her third time trying to do yeah. this finally.
We're back on our.
She can finally get to the throne room.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, she says, I'm going to do this if you try to interfere or call your guards. Mm-hmm. And he says, I'm not going to call anyone. I'm actually glad to see you again. It gets pretty lonely for me around here. I know you must get lonely too. Very manipulative, like mm-hmm. oh, we're the same, we're both going through this.
And doesn't he has her broom and he kind of yeah. uses it as like a peace offering.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
look, I'm handing it back to you, like right. why would I, it's like I'm putting down your person. Weapons type of a thing. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. She says, you don't know the first thing about me. He says, but I do. I know the real reason you came back here. It's why everyone comes to see the wizard, so I'll grant their heart's desire. He says, you want to stop fighting, stop running. Elphaba, you've been so strong through all of this. Aren't you tired of being the strong one? Wouldn't you like someone to take care of you? Please, can't we start again? What do you think of that little appeal?
I don't think the wizard thinks through things. This is my final thought on the wizard. I think he just goes off of human instinct and like containing a situation as it's going. He needs a woman by his side to actually think through things. Morrible is that. She's the planner. He's he makes everyone happy. He makes everyone good. But he doesn't really think through things. I really think he does want her to be back. He thinks it's easier if she just comes back. We'll erase what we just said about her. I think he does prefer that. I don't think he wants to have Elphaba as the enemy. It's just kind of happened. I don't, because he's not the scary Hitler of the Maguire books that Maguire yeah. made. This is not that. And I really don't think he wants her as an enemy. I think he's also freaking afraid of her. And that's another thing too.
That's like, what I was going to say. Yeah. He's like, I don't want you as my enemy because you're pretty powerful.
I have a note about that. We'll get to it later.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, I like that. Yeah, I mean, even the stage directions, it says, realizing it as he says it. It's almost like he's just sort of like,
yes,
I got this. I'm improvising. Yeah, come on. Yeah.
He's a great improviser. That's the thing. Like, he relies on these, like, master of ceremonies skills.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where Wonderful starts, sort of some underscoring. She says, "Don't you think I wish I could? I would give anything to turn back the clocks, go back to that time when I actually believed that you were wonderful." Sarcastic. The Wonderful Wizard of Oz.
The book title.
There it is. I know.
I kind of love it. Sometimes in the Chanzel, it gets a laugh. And that kind of gets
lost. Of course.
But yeah. I love it. I love recognizing when people way back when
they're
when
like,
they
watched we know it.
They're so excited about it.
I know. It's cute. She says, "No one believed in you more than I did."
That line gets
just, like, disillusionment.
Every
single time.
Dorothy will. Dorothy's going to do every the same
single
thing.
Time.
Dorothy will too. Yeah.
Yeah.
That is a Dorothy line. You're so right.
Their journeys are the same.
That's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Oh, so true. So true.
Very parallel.
Yeah. Elphaba tried to understand. "I never had a family of my own. I was always traveling. So I guess I just wanted to give the citizens of Oz everything." She says, "So you lied to them." And he says, "Only verbally." And that line gets a laugh. Like, the audience definitely is in on the comedy of this, or the, you know, sliminess of his character, I think. But they're kind of also, us as the audience, we're like getting along for the ride with this song.
It makes me think of, not to go back to the 2016 presidential election, but to go back to the 2016 presidential election when everything got leaked about Donald Trump and his locker room talk, and just being like, it was just talk. Like, it wasn't actions. It's like, you said what you did. Like, how is that not action? I'm lost. Like, that makes me think of this moment
here. Oh my gosh. People do this a lot. This happened on my jury duty case. Where the like, person was like literally the evidence was like these recordings of things they said,
here
literally
you are
telling the entire crime. But he was like, "Well, I didn't actually do it." But we're like, "But you said you did every detail that matches the evidence." Like, it was a very similar kind of thing where it's like, so you're just telling a story?
But that's what we have to go off of most of the time.
Right.
Mm.
Now, I honestly think it's much harder to lie now because we have people with phones in your face. Like, it's much harder to get away with things. That's 100%. Like the one kind of like, I mean, it's a good witch and a bad witch, I guess. Like, the one kind of benefit of technology is like there is less break-ins. There's less like aggressive behavior because phones will put you away now.
Yeah, it's true. Well, he says, I only lied verbally. Besides, they were the lies they wanted to hear. So actually, like, I'm a good person. I'm the hero. And then we get my favorite way to lead into a song is like, "I never asked for this or planned it in advance." Like,
it's
half
so
the line
good.
Is spoken, half is sung. I mean, here we go. Here's Wonderful.
He sings it on the recording, to give him that. Joel Grey does
"I never asked for this or planned it." Yeah. Yeah. And this is such a cute little intro. "I was merely blown here by the winds of chance."
I think these are my favorite Stephen Schwartz lyrics. I'm just going to say it. This number.
Oh, wow.
Socrates and Mediocrities.
Socrates, Mediocrities.
I love this idea. I love this idea that no one knows, and Oz actually knows who Socrates is.
No.
Because, like, Socrates
Yeah, they're
is
like, wait, what?
I want to see an Elphaba in the worst way. Be like, what are you talking
about? Yeah, like,
who is
who that? Be that? Yeah.
Who'd that be? Yeah.
Who'd that be?
Who'd that be? You know what?
That's very true. That is very true. I didn't think of it that
These
way.
These rhymes are just so clever. True. And like, the storytelling is so easy to follow. It's so good.
Stephen and his rhymes, like, I've been saying it this whole time, but yeah, like, he's master. He knows.
I was intellectually seduced by the
intellectually seduced.
It's working.
By Stephen Schwartz.
It's working.
"I got hooked and all too soon. What can I say? I got carried away. And not just by balloon." Little so chuckle. And now we get into this sort of like mid-century American pastiche, which just means like, for anyone wondering, you're sort of imitating another style from another time. And we get the title of the song, Wonderful. People called him Wonderful. So he said he said Wonderful. So I think it's like every other line, at least, if not every line.
He didn't ask for this. He didn't ask for it.
He didn't ask. And
Lana Turner called him Wonderful.
If you insist. If you insist, Lana Turner. Sure. Let's do it.
It's almost like when you say something enough, you'll believe it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh.
I mean, yes. that's all we're all doing. Like, at the end of the day, like, all of us are born and then we become things. Like, how do we become things? We just get up every single day and say we're doing them.
And, like, and say we right? did like, them.
You know what I mean? Doing them. It's just, like, that's all.
True.
Yeah.
Are you lying? I don't know. Are you telling the truth? I don't know.
Maybe. I don't know. We don't actually know.
But it's crazy. Like, it's not – we're all born the same without any titles or labels and whatever,
and
you know?
And we become them. Yeah.
And we become
very
them.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And even says – I mean, he's endearing in this moment because he's
I love
telling
him.
The truth, I guess. Or he's admitting. He's like, it's hard to resist. Like, I got swept up in this.
That's what so, makes him likable. That he, like –
He's likable.
He owns, like, you know how it is, like, when you watch someone maybe, like, on The Bachelor or, like, you know, like, a reality TV show that, like, or, like, the
yes,
Desperate.
I
always say The Desperate Housewives of Beverly Hills. It's not the name of the show. It's the real
The
Housewives.
Desperate Housewives.
I can find them. But it's, like, when they, like, are just honest about, like, yeah, I did it for the money or, like, I really wanted
it's
the
like,
Instagram
okay,
followers.
Sure.
It's, like, okay, at least you're just
Thank
saying
you.
What we all are, like, slightly annoyed by.
Right.
This makes me less annoyed.
Yes.
I will like stand. I will stand by this. I feel like Wonderful is like, and if you're to me, if you're a good wizard, is like, I believe how you got here. Like,
yes. So,
I'm like, oh, I see now. I get it. You have a lot of charm, my friend. Got it.
Can you imagine James Franco singing Wonderful? Anyone?
I don't want to.
I want to either.
That would be funny though. That'd be an interesting.
That's the thing, though. I can't see him doing this well, so that's why I'm not a great big fan of Oz the Great and Powerful.
No, he'd be like, "I am wonderful," and like,
"What are you talking about?"
Yeah, like, who cares what they said? I don't know. It'd be different.
I made a TikTok maybe back in early 2020 or something like that, and I said that I didn't like Oz the Great and Powerful. And they're like, "How do you not like Oz the Great and Powerful?" I was like,
"Oh, we're with you."
I'm like, guys, it's not canon with. Anything. Mm-hmm. Like, not, I was like, my canon, I didn't like this was a canon with Wicked. It's not even canon with The Wizard of Oz.
I could do Once Upon a Time more than I could do Oz the Great and Powerful.
I love Once Upon a Time.
Give me Zelina over.
Give us Zelina any day.
Theodora, Evan Mora. Like, give me Zelina Evan any Mora. Day over those hoes.
Oh, you heard it here first.
Selena for life. The Wicked always wins.
Wicked always wins. Oh my god, it's so good.
She tries to have alphabet pipes, so I give it to Selena.
At least she's trying. Come on.
She's trying.
Yeah. Well, I love this line. Hey, look who's wonderful. This corn-fed hick.
Shocked the musical?
Shocked the musical? Should we have a crossover?
Think so.
Who said it might be keen to build a town of green and a wonderful road of yellow brick? And here's
that's
where we get Elphaba.
The American dream, too. It's just like
the
going
American
from
dream,
nothing
yeah.
to
yes.
everything.
Oh, you're so right.
I do think Winnie missed something here. She could have had a little she could have a little throwback. Because he says, or Elphaba says right after that, but it's all just smoke and mirrors. And that's the truth. And I wish he had it. Ain't it the truth? Ain't it the truth?
Ain't it
that
would have
been
Ain't
a nice little
truth.
Like Cowardly Lion Burt Lahr.
But she must say it in the Burt Lahr accent.
Yes.
Can you imagine?
I would be here for it. I love a corny moment occasionally.
Give us a corny moment. Smoke and mirrors.
Lions
and he
tigers
says
tigers and Paris.
And okay. Biz.
And Biz. And Biz.
And Biz. And this is where he sings, the truth is not a thing of fact or reason. The truth is just what everyone agrees on. Then he speaks, where I'm from, we believe all sorts of things that aren't true. We call it history. And the audience, ha 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 ha.
I get it.
Oh, right. I do think
that's us.
We've been noticing, Brie, like, there's a lot of differences if you watch, like, the Chenzel with the audience to now. Like, to now. Like, people don't respond the same way. And this is getting more of the... Not a laugh. It's like a, ugh. It's like a very, you've been saying this for 20 years. I guess I didn't hear you back in 2003, but now I hear you.
Yeah. This song in particular just always hits. Doesn't matter.
This section coming up is
quite relevant.
This section coming up is everything.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. He sings again. A man's called a traitor or liberator. Oh. A rich man's a thief or philanthropist. Is one a crusader or ruthless invader? It's all in which label is able to persist. There are precious few at ease with moral ambiguities, so we act as though they don't exist.
Whoa. So there's not many alphabets in this world is what he's saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that like, can we break that down? I'm a little confused.
Yeah.
That's how I interpret it. There's precious few at ease with moral ambiguities. How I'm interpreting that is like, there's precious few who don't just accept it, accept what the world mm-hmm. is, who like want to rebel, want to reconstruct, burn it down energy.
Yeah.
So we try, like, I mean, look at like the media time and time again, don't give people who want to like completely burn everything down the spotlight.
Yeah.
I mean, right. We're acting like, right now
about it
in the upcoming presidential election, which is so wild that like we started this podcast in a presidential election and we're going into another one.
We're going into just, another like, one.
But just watching like this two-party existence, like, I'm like, can we give the other, like, I know, yes, like, I'm going to vote for Joe Biden. I'm going to vote for Joe Biden. But, like, why is that the only option? And the media has made it the only option.
Yeah, this or that.
Yeah, and I'm like, there's more people running. Like, can we
give
it a
chance? There are other options.
There are other options, but it's those people scare the Democrats, too. The people who are the progressive candidates who are running. So it's just, like, it's interesting.
Yeah.
It's fascinating that, because as Stephen Schwartz said, like, this is sort of the philosophical thesis, I guess, of the show.
Yes, it is.
And interesting that it's in this, like, da-dee-da, like, very upbeat kind of, like, razzle-dazzle song that if you don't listen, you could miss it. And it's coming from the wizard.
Yeah.
That's kind of fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Because our country lives under that idea.
We should do a Joel Grey musical tribute. We make mashups.
We should.
This would be fascinating because I think a lot of what he's known for is the like razzle dazzly music.
Yeah.
That like seduce people and have like an undertone of something's not okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's a lot of the people he plays. The people are just really good at
them. Very true.
That would be interesting.
Yeah, let's do it. You heard it here first.
We keep coming up with song ideas on the pod.
This on the pod. Wow.
It's actually a brainstorming session.
Yeah.
It's
really, yeah.
Thank you so much for being here.
I'm just here.
Yeah. And now we get this whole chorus. They call me wonderful, so I am wonderful. That's a cool line. Like, I mean, if people tell you this is what you are, I guess that's what I am.
Yeah.
I guess for better or worse. I guess I am beautiful.
I am hilarious. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. In fact, it's so much who I am. It's part of my name. With my help, you can be the same. Which is actually interesting because she becomes the Wicked Witch of the West. So Wicked is part of her like name.
That's kind of fun.
Yeah.
Weird, right? Glinda the Good. I don't know. We all have these.
Yeah.
They all have these like descriptors.
Tara the Terrible.
Bree Left Witch. At long last, you're going to receive your due. You're going to be Elphaba, the most celebrated.
I love
that. Oh, sorry. Let me rephrase this. At long last, you're going to receive your long overdue. And just so you know, the most celebrated are the rehabilitated.
That line hits different now, too. Ooh. Especially with cancel culture. I don't know.
Whoa.
I think we pause here. That's really, I didn't think of it that way, but this line does hit. Like, I'm like, oh, yeah, we do love a redemption arc. We do love
a redemption arc.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where does this feel true right now? Is there any specifics?
I don't know. I feel like.
Person that is, like, doing well.
I feel like nowadays, though, we really. Like, redemption arcs kind of, like, I don't know. I think maybe, like, my chronic onlineness has made me feel this way. I just feel like a lot of people don't – like, when people do something that's bad, people don't really want to give them second chances anymore.
I agree. I think that's also a harm. That's not good either.
And I think that's interesting, like, looking at this because I feel like even if – Elphaba actually went along with this plan of, like, oh, yeah, I don't think – it would have taken a really – really long time too, and also I don't think Marvel would have went along with it either, and then you'd be like, what is wrong with you, my guy? Absolutely not. him.
I don't know. Yeah, like, how does he think he's going to do that? Like, yeah. Really quickly. It's, again, I think right. That's the thing. The women clean up all of what he does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is very clear. I am thinking of Lea Michele in this moment. Yeah. I'm like, Lea Michele is, the, like, I think she's, like, the golden child of redemption arc for the Broadway community.
Yeah.
I mean, she just had a very successful run in Funny Girl. And before that, there was so much controversy with her castmates on Glee coming out on her, and like her response was ridiculed, and then she kind of went into like a silent zone time and then reemerged and like was the toast of the town.
Toast of the town.
And like, I mean, the reports on her, I have friends who are in the show, they all loved working with her. So I'm like, that's what we want, right? Like, we don't want to just believe she's an asshole forever. Yeah. If that was true about her before, like, isn't that what we want? We do want to have people get second chances, or do we want them to never get any chance because of how they acted at a certain time? I'm not sure, because I agree to some extent. These kinds of opportunities, how many people could say they played Fanny Brice on Broadway? It's like not even a handful of people. So they're precious opportunities. Should they be given to someone who's has a reputation for not being kind or not being a good person to work with? But at the end of the day, if she's changed, why shouldn't she get that? I don't know. Yeah. I don't have the answers to these questions, but
that's a gray area.
Moral ambiguities.
Yes. Moral ambiguities.
Yes, again, there we are.
I think it's interesting because, like, we love these. I feel like a lot of Marvel films are like, let's talk about the villain and give them, let's look into their backstory. Like, we love that. But in real life, do we do that for people? And the only thing I'm thinking of, sorry to bring it here, is The Bachelor again. Like, they do this a lot, or like Bachelor in Paradise. It'll be the villain from the season comes back and they get a redemption arc. or they become more villainous. But like, when they become, like, there was one time where there were like two villains who came back who like hated each other.
There could only be one.
And then they made friends. They like became friends and they were like this dynamic power friendship. And it was like, yes. But it's like, wait, weren't they like the worst people on that other season? But it's like, you know, it was very interesting.
Can't our roles change? Do we have to
be
into the good forever if that's our title? Yeah. You know what I mean?
True. Yeah. Very good line.
Yeah,
so he's trying to appeal to her, like, there's going to be this huge celebration throughout Oz that's all to do with you, his own version of Wizard and I. And then it leads us into the end. Wonderful. They call you wonderful. She sings with him. They're like dancing together. They're spinning. Intellectually seduced. Quote Brie. It does sound wonderful. Trust me, it's fun when you are wonderful. I could be wonderful, she says. Yes. Wonderful, wonderful. And then
you're wonderful. I'm wonderful.
Everybody get to be wonderful.
Everyone's wonderful.
And we get number 20A, the Set Free the Monkeys score. She says, wait. And she is very smart to do this at this moment. I'll accept your proposition on one condition. You set those monkeys free.
This music gets me. The like little like like how it goes to like a dissonant and like a little messed up. Like, his song isn't working, but it's still working. We can do
like
this.
But like, it is. Yeah. Oh, she's like almost affecting his song and changing the chords a little bit.
This is why I think he is like, there is a good guy in there. Like, he says, okay, done. Like, I just want her back. Like, he says, sure. Maybe his reasoning is a little bit self-protecting, right? And saving face. Like, I don't want to get magic spelled by this witch. I want to have her as an ally. Maybe it is more of that than like actually giving a hoot about Elphaba. Mm-hmm. But I do respect him for freeing, even though we find out there's way more secrets buried underneath who he's been holding captive.
Ugh, right.
And that's
so he pulls the lever. The cage opens. The winged monkeys spill out. They dance with excitement. Elphaba laughs with delight. They fly out. There's this whole, the underscoring here is pretty fascinating, just like slightly different from our kind of monkey theme. I love their dance choreography moment. It's fierce.
So good.
And so like, it looks hard to do in their costume.
There's so much happening in that scene that I like was watching a video of it last night. And I was like, oh, right. They're like actually like dancing. There's so much happening. There's monkeys flying. There's monkeys running up the side of the thing. They're dancing. They're jumping. It's so much. I'm overstimulated. Yeah. every single time.
It's,
and she gets, I can picture them. Moment. She gets to do fly.
Oh,
she,
yes.
No.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's just so good.
Chistery. She has a moment with Chistery. Fly, yes. Chistery. You're free. Go fly. Yes, you're right. I loved that moment. Fly, fly.
The laugh, so too. Lindsay Heather Pierce's laugh is pretty on the money. I was like, okay, I see you. I see you. I
Come
see
on.
You. You put that, yes, soundbite on and you said, how do I get that in here?
Da-da-da-da. Let's study. Come on, Lindsay. Get it.
It's really good.
She says, thank you. Thank you. Your Ozness.
Oh,
and we have like this jubilant moment. And then we see a figure trembling under a blanket. You under the blanket. And the wizard is like, uh-oh. He says, no, wait. She lifts the blanket. Get up now. And then number 20B, Dr. Dillamond discovered. We see Dr. Dillamond is underneath the blanket, trembling, terrified, crouching on his knees. Villamine's acting in this section is heartbreaking, and you can really see her every facial expression, so highly recommend it. She says, no, it can't be, Dr. Dillamond. Wizard, the stage directions say a desperate man. He's like, oh, shoot.
The power shift here.
This
power shift. I think it's interesting how the characters in Wicked react to the most, who they think the most powerful person in the room is at a moment in time. Yeah.
Very, very true.
I mean, she's also mad, and she has been known to produce spells accidentally when she's mad. So,
right. Like, what might happen?
Yeah.
He immediately is trying to explain himself. Elphaba, we couldn't let him continue speaking out. Dr. Dillamond, are you all right? The goat stares blankly at Elphaba. Don't be afraid. It's me, Elphaba. He's not speaking. Don't you remember me? The goat emits a small bleat. Can't you speak? The goat emits another horrible bleat. Elphaba stares at the wizard with growing fury. Do you want to know my heart's desire? It's to fight you till the day I die. She gets up. The wizard runs behind the head and immediately goes back into his, I'm now the head voice, speaking into this microphone.
A choice that I've noticed a lot of Dillamans make, like in the recent times that I've seen it, is that they won't look at anything, like they only look at the ground, but they notice Elphaba's hands and then just stare at that. And that always gets me. I'm like, oh my God, like this is the only thing. And he's like, he like can't look up. I don't know, that whole part. And also the dynamic with the audience shifts here too, because here we have, you know, in the beginning, everyone's laughing like, oh, he's a goat. That's funny. Laughs when he bleeds then. And now it's just like, oh.
Oh, shoot. Mm-hmm.
In the Chenzal, yes, there's like audible gasps. In the audience.
Yeah.
I watched with Michael X. Martin recently, who was a recent Dillamond in
2022. Yep.
And he like is trying to like form words. Like him trying to like make, she's really trying to communicate with her, but he can't. So this is just devastating, this moment.
Yeah.
At least he's not dead, like in the book, because in the book.
Right. That's a pro.
It's just Nyx in the book.
But it's so sad.
Yeah.
It's really sad.
I saw it with a group of high school, like there was a high school group when I saw it one time, and they were like so audibly like gagged by it.
Distraught. Yeah.
It was really, really sad. Like, oh, guys, this is going to get worse.
Well, it's also sad because it's like we had this triumphant moment. Like, yes, the monkeys are free. Okay. Everything feels like it's going to be good. And maybe the wizard is good. And now it's like the worst thing is happening.
Yeah.
So Dillamond bolts from the room. She calls after him. She says, come back. And now the scene really shifts. Two guards appear. They say, halt. Elphaba brandishes her broom as a bayonet. Suddenly, Fiero appears in the doorway and says, are you all right? Your Ozness, checking in on the wizard. Elphaba is very surprised. They're both surprised to see each other. He says, I don't believe it. She says, oh, Fiero, thank Oz. And then, boom, Fiero is pointing his rifle at Elphaba and says, silence, witch.
I mean, he's got to do it. He's doing the right thing right now. Putting up the facade.
Putting up a little act.
I think it's interesting, though. This is, like, the first time we hear her just be called witch, right?
Witch. I don't think that's happened, yeah.
It's a huge thing in the book when she just loses Elphaba and she's just referred to as witch. And I think that's so interesting when, like, an identity eats another identity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, that must have given her a chill because she doesn't know that he's faking it until he makes it.
Yeah, exactly. Like from her perspective. And if it's, you know, your first time seeing it, you're like, oh, what? Wait, what? We have a comedic moment. There's a goat on the lamb, sir.
I don't get it.
I don't get it either. But the audience laughs.
No, on the lamb is a term for like being on the run.
See, like, I think I knew something. I was like, this is clearly a saying. Thank you, Brie.
Yes.
Like,
yeah, I don't know.
It took me a second. I had to. I went through a phase where I looked up like 1930s slang. And because I went, listen, in middle school, I was crazy.
The laugh is going to start to die soon as like the audiences get younger.
Mm-hmm. You guys don't know your 1930s slang?
Come on, pull it together.
You're not looking up 1930s slang in middle school? What are you doing?
That's my favorite thing to do whenever I do another show in like a different era is to look up slang.
The colloquialisms.
Yeah.
It drives me nuts. People do thumbs up all the times. Oh, I think I saw it in one of the Oz bootlegs. I was like, thumbs up would not be a thing in Oz. I get very annoyed by thumbs up because it's like an easy go-to for people to do. Like just be like thumbs up like in a moment. I'm like, thumbs up didn't come around until this time and people bring it back before. I get very annoyed. I'm like, look up when slang. Look up when physical gestures became a thing. Thumbs up have beat it back. They've gone back in history now.
I know. The timeline has changed. It's not putting them on blast because it's kind of like, I think it was on purpose, I guess. Like it's a breaking of the, you know, time period. But when I saw Music Man with Hugh Jackman and Sutton, they had a whole moment where they like took a, like a picture happened and Hugh Jackman put up a peace sign. And I was like, what?
Music Man? In the Donna Vivino bootleg during One Short Day, she goes to take the picture and she like does this, but she does it too late as she like mixed the picture. And it's the greatest thing I've ever seen.
It's just funny because it's like part of me is like, okay, are we like in on the joke together? Like we know that's not accurate, but you know, it's kind of weird. But Music Man was a weird one. I was like,
Also, people do the quotation fingers all the time.
Right.
Yeah.
It happened in Wicked. I've seen it in Wicked for You Know Who. Sometimes the Glindas will do quotation fingers. I'm like, these gestures are just like a little too modern. Thumbs up is not the most modern gesture in the world. It didn't become popular until like, I think like the mid, like 1930s, 40s, 50s probably is what really made it become a thing. But it was around since 1917, but not really a part of like.
Oh.
Some of the Glindas are dabbing now, so. Anything's possible.
Anything can happen.
Why am I such a crank with that? I'm like a grump with that stuff.
We all have
We all have our little things. That's like my thing where I'm like, oh, don't do that. It's such it's a cheap laugh.
Right.
And you know.
I'm with you. I feel you. So Fierro still has his rifle trained on Elphabet. Never mind all that. Go just fetch me some water, as much as you can carry. The guards run off, and Elphaba is very upset. Fierro, not you too. I said silence! And then he pulls the wizard into view.
Whip a snapper!
Don't make a sound, Your Ozness, unless you want all your guests to know the truth about the wonderful Wizard of Oz. Elphaba, I'll find you later. Now get out of here. And she's like, wait, what? I thought you might have changed. So we realize, like, okay, he's on her side.
Watch The Wizard changed. During this? He's like,
oh, yeah.
Wait, what? But I'm like, no, he should never see this. Like, this is just more ammunition for him to, like, meddle
with. Listen, watching The Wizard during this whole interaction is the greatest thing ever. There's this video called Choices, Options, and Boots, or something like that. Actors in Wicked making amazing choices.
Yeah.
It's just, like, a compilation of, like, amazing choices that actors in Wicked are making. And there is one of Michael McCormick literally sitting in between like Glinda and Elphaba and Fierro, and he's like,
reacting,
like iconic,
like iconic. Spill the tea. I'm getting
it's
all
like
the
what's
tea
going
right
on?
Yeah,
this drama. Now he does
report this to the tabloids.
Yeah.
Fierro says, "I have changed." All at once, Glinda appears in the doorway. What's going on? She sees Elphaba, runs to her, hugs her. They have this moment. Elfie, thank Oz you're alive. Elphaba can, like, can't even form sentences right now. Only you shouldn't have come if anyone discoverates you. Fiero's telling Glinda she better go. Glinda sees Fiero with the wizard and is like, wait, Fiero, what are you doing? Like, what's going on? He says, just go back to the ball. And Glinda is still in her kind of like right before defying gravity-ness of like, oh, your awesomeness. He means no disrespectation. Mm-hmm. We all went to school together. This, I'm sure, is a big misunderstanding. Trying to
Kristen's
like.
Kristen's delivery of this, gold. Gold.
Oh, yeah.
She's like, we all went to school together. Like, she's really trying to like, you know, like manage it in such a way that only Kristen Chenoweth can do. It's just like a gold moment.
Yes. Yes. I love that.
I also want to bring attention to the stage direction again, because we once again see the in desperation and that parallel of playing to the most powerful person in the room.
Oh, yeah. True, true, true.
More desperate in the scene. Mm-hmm.
Lots of desperation.
All the hurts, all the pointing fingers. Yes.
Desperate Housewives of Oz.
Desperate Housewives of Oz.
Fiero interrupts. He says, Elphaba. Glinda interrupts. Fiero, have you misplaced your mind? What are you doing?
Lucky. Just kidding.
Wait, I have to bring something up at this point, because this always gets me and I always get really annoyed. I used to get really annoyed by it. So I don't know if this is like a choice that actors are making or if this was a direction they were given, but there's always a pause in between the Fiero have misplaced your line and the I'm going with her. And for the longest time, I never understood why, but then I like thought about it and I was like, oh wait, he's like actually thinking about the choice, because originally I was like, well, Fiora's this really impulsive character who really doesn't think about anything, so he should be like immediate, like, let me just tell you what I'm gonna do. But instead he like takes him in and he like thinks about it, which shows, you know, how much Elphaba has changed. And I'm like, oh, that's really good.
I think Elphaba has taught him he has a brain. Can use it. He doesn't have to accept the labels he has been given.
Prince
of Winky Country. Mm-hmm. What that looks like.
Yeah.
That's smart. I like that. I like that discovery.
I used to not like that choice, but now it makes so much sense and I love it.
Yeah.
I like it. I love it. There you go. Yeah.
I like this. So he really decides in that moment, I'm going with Elphaba. And this is weird. I mean, it's funny. Glinda and Elphaba both say what, but in the script, they have, there's two A's.
What?
That's how I read it. What? What? They're both in shock. They're both just, what are you saying? Glinda says, all this time, the two of you behind my back. Elphaba says, Glinda, no, it wasn't like that. Fiero says, well, it was. Big laugh, at least in the bootleg I watched. He says, but it also wasn't. So that's very murky. Like, if I was Glinda, I'd be like, what do you mean? It was, it wasn't. Tell me the truth. Give me the details.
We had chemistry. They had charged moments, but nothing ever happened.
Transpired.
There, moments were there.
I'm going to bring this up. There is a fanfic that someone wrote about the, like, what that line means. It's like if Fiero and Elphaba, like, had an affair during.
Ooh.
And it's very.
That's like
it's
the
very,
book.
It's very
that
good.
That is the book. Yeah.
That is the book. It's very well written. I don't think that's what happened. But it's very
but
well
it
written.
Could have.
But it
I
could
question
have.
In the book. Because it's never, I don't think this is ever clearly stated in the book, mm-hmm. if Glinda is the one to turn in Fiero.
Oh.
Because they don't have a romantic connection.
No. Right.
But he sees her, they have an exchange, and she keeps being like, you know where Elphaba is, right? And he's like, no. And she's like, but you know where Elphaba is, right?
Yeah,
and
she keeps knows.
Persisting with it. And like, I do think because his discovery when he's caught and most likely we actually don't have confirmation murdered in the book is right after he has seen Glinda. I think she turned him in.
I really bring that up again.
I haven't read the book in so long. Oh my God.
Yeah.
There's a lot left up to you, which makes it a great book to discuss.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't read that book in so
it's
long.
It's not very clear.
No,
I don't like that.
For Gregory, question.
Oh,
Gregory,
Glinda.
But like Glinda was playing the game and like thinking she's doing the right thing,
right?
Like she's gonna do here. Well, actually, no. We'll get into it. But this moment with Glinda, I think it's the cruelest thing she's done the whole show. But it's also pain. We do stupid shit when we're in pain.
Distraught. Yeah. Because he says, let's go. Elphaba and Fiero leave. She says, fine, go. You deserve each other. And this is where the wizard takes a little green bottle out of his pocket. Here, have a swig of this. Dots are connecting in our minds. Right. Dulls the pain. She says, no, thank you. Suddenly, Madame Warble appears in her furry emerald green getup. Is it true your betrothed has brought her into custody?
Oh my God, I watched Sharon Sachs, the most extra performance.
Give us an extra Warble. Like, we love it.
Is it true? Is it true?
Is it true? Like, from nowhere, just walking onto the stage.
I like a Sharon Sachs drag queen. Like, that's what I mean.
Oh, give us that. I'm obsessed. Glinda's burying her face in her hands. The stage directions say she sobs. Warble turns to the wizard as if like, what did I say? What happened? The wizard says, I'm afraid our new captain of the guard had other plans. What? She's not been captured? Quite the opposite. And as Bri already mentioned, he says, considering how well she eluded us last time, now they're trying to come up with a plan. Warble says we need to smoke her out.
He doesn't come up with anything. She does it all. Again.
I know. He's like, how? How are we going to do this? And then Glinda... From downstage right, Glinda says, her sister. What?
Is this face still buried on this line?
Face still buried.
I like, though, I think what I've watched, or maybe I'm imagining this in my brain. I'm not actually sure. I could see, again, I could be making up a truth. Like, I've seen the Glindas drop their sadness and be like, her sister.
Her sister.
Just like cold as ice. I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
While this is like a horrible thing for her to do, it's good. Like, it's so well done because it shows us that like we could all be capable of this in this kind of moment and maybe have done similar things of like, all right, well, I know how to get that person and I'm feeling distraught right now. So do it. And she might regret it later, obviously. But she says, use her sister. Spread a rumor. Make her think her sister is in trouble. She will fly to her side and you'll have her. And it's very... Go ahead.
I love the Glindas that, like, as soon as they finish their line, they, like, realize what they've done. And they're like, oh, shit. Oh, no.
Right. Because it's like, you know this person so well, like, your best friend, and you just shared the best way to get under their skin with very powerful people. Mm-hmm. And the wizard's like, aha, yes, this is good. Glinda's trying to pull herself together. I have a slight headache. I think I'll lie down. She leaves. Warble and Wizard are left. Warble says, a rumor won't do it. Elphaba's too smart for that. And Wizard says, far too smart. They look at each other. Perhaps a change in the weather.
I mean, who says that?
Warble says that.
I thought Warble said it.
Yeah, I'm like, why does it say Wizard in here?
In the script, it says the Wizard.
Yeah, that's not right.
That's funny.
Incorrect.
See, now can I trust the script?
I can't even trust the script. Carol was like, that's my line. Because it's so iconic, too. She's like, a change in the weather. And that's so her character. So, yeah. We hear a rumble of thunder and perhaps see a distant flash of lightning.
And it always rains during I'm Not That Girl.
I know.
The sideways rain, too.
Yeah.
Sideways rain. It's the worst kind of rain.
I hate it. That's what was happening yesterday here in the city.
We don't like sideways rain.
We can't do anything for sideways rain.
I know. So we're in scene 3A, a little like mini scene. Glinda is walking slowly down a deserted palace hallway, I know it's sad, but that also makes me laugh. It's like a desert. It just seems so like.
Also, never clocked that this was a hallway until I read the script. And then I looked at bootlegs that were like angled up and I was like, oh, there's actually like lighting on the ground. And it goes
There is like a hallway.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's like all these like in between places, there's no, it's all lighting. There's like no set.
Right.
Yeah.
So it makes sense though. She'd be like wandering the halls. Like,
I wonder if she'll be in a deserted hallway in the film.
That'd be cool.
Ooh.
I want to see a deserted palace hallway. And she sings, don't wish, don't start. Wishing only wounds the heart. She struggles to push down her tears. The music continues. She doesn't sing. And then she finishes. There's a girl I know. He loves her so. I'm not that girl. And usually I think what's written is to sing the low note that Elphaba also sings.
I haven't heard a Glinda not do the low note.
I don't think I have either. Oh, you have? Okay.
I have. Okay.
Sometimes, you know, we can't hit it every day. It's all right.
Change it up.
We're human beings.
Yeah.
Correct.
And that is the end of our scene.
I was really like baffled by how short I'm Not That Girl reprises.
I always thought it was longer.
It seems longer, and I was like, that's 5 lines.
That's literally like 30 seconds.
She said, I'm hurt. I don't need to explain myself. I'm out.
Is it on the album? It's not, right?
It is.
It is?
Yeah, and then that beautiful transition into As Long As
Your Mind. Oh, I know. I can't even.
Yeah, the transition into As Long As Your Mind. So
oh, it's such a good transition. So it's fantastic.
Good.
Yeah.
So good.
Well, why don't we share our iconified moment of the scene award? So this is like, you could interpret it as the most memorable moment, the moment you love the most. Something that just, when you think of this scene, it comes to mind.
I mean, I think I'm going to quote our starting line. Where I'm from, we believe all sorts of things aren't true. We call it history. I think that's my iconified moment.
Mm-hmm. For me today, for some reason, I think it's like the monkeys finally being set free. Maybe because we've done so much talking about the timeline that I'm like, oh, yes. And just that drastic change of Dr. Dillman being discovered and like how much of an emotional whiplash that is.
Yeah. As she gets the Margaret Hamilton moment, which is cool.
The Margaret Hamilton moment's cool. So cool.
I wrote that down as well. I said the monkeys flying and Dr. Dillman being discovered. Mm-hmm. I think those are, like, for me, I love Wicked from, like, an audience perspective. And, like, those are the moments that really get people.
So well done.
Well, it's crazy. It's like, gosh, how many times have we all experienced, like, a massive win then to just feel a setback?
And then to be like, okay.
Another mountain.
And that's kind of what life is, right? It's like, cool, we made headway on this, and another problem has arisen.
She didn't even get to have like a party. Nothing. No. It happened so fast. So she doesn't even get to relish in like something actually going right.
Yeah.
Oh. Heartbreaking.
Elfie be struggling a little bit.
Elfie be struggling.
Things move fast for her.
She's struggling out here.
And now we end with our episode Emerald. So that could be a takeaway from our discussion or any research that you were like, whoa, this is going to be stuck with me, or just a takeaway for today from this section of the show.
I think I'll stick with Joel being my Emerald. His history as a performer just culminating in a truly wonderful performance in Wicked, and getting to have his history be so aligned with the Wizard's history is just so cool. Like, that just, it's a field day for me as someone who likes to research this and find these connections. I love it.
I think my Emerald is talking about Villa Mines portrayal.
Yeah, I love that we watched her.
Really, really good. Really, really good. Yeah.
I want to watch her whole show now.
She's so good. She's one that stands out. Her and Julia Murney on the bootlegs, I always have like a little extra
acting.
Soft spot for the acting.
Yeah. I think my Emerald is what we were saying about everyone in the scene has done something to hurt somebody else. Like, no one really, that I've never thought of it that way, but that's like the point of the show, right? Is who's the hero? Who's the villain in this? Like, there's all these problems that have arisen throughout this act and a half, and everyone's trying to solve them to the best of their ability, but they're secrets. We don't all know the full quote unquote truth.
Yeah.
So you could kind of track this scene from multiple different perspectives and be like, wow, they're just trying to do what they think is right in this moment, I guess.
Is Wonderful the midpoint of Act Two? Is it about?
It feels that way.
Yeah.
I think it's almost,
the hurdle.
Almost. Now yeah, like, it feels like, whoa.
We're gonna come down from this.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
We get to have a nice little steamy.
A steamy moment. A fight scene.
Yeah.
A fierce 11 o'clock number. Yeah.
I love Act Two.
Act Two is my home.
This is why I'm upset about two parts. Wicked. I'm like, just give me Act Two.
I know we have to wait.
Just give me Act Two.
We have to wait a long time.
We still have a while.
We still have a strike.
Even Act One. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Well, this was so fun. I loved this conversation.
Thank you for having me. Yeah.
Thank you for joining, Bree. Like, expert for sure.
Yeah.
We would love to have you back.
Oh, I would love, to be back.
I think we need to experiment sometime in the spring with seeing Wicked at the matinee and then going to see The Wiz at night.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
People aren't doing that. They're not talking to each other, these teams.
No.
These marketing teams.
They better be marketing together.
Quite literally.
I will kill them.
Give us like a mashup YouTube high quality performance.
My favorite thing about, I have the London Palladium's recent production, like the souvenir program for The Wizard of Oz. They have a huge Wicked spread inside of it. It's like so much happened before Dorothy came in. I was like, I love this, like this merging of like all the verses. Yes, like I think that'd be really, so fun. So
we should make like Wiz and Wicked don't do a partnership.
If Evelyn and Elphaba do not do something together, I'm not okay. Like, come on, have Evelyn and Elphaba on Broadway.
Come on.
Together. And the word on the street is that Evelyn's going to win a Tony. Like, that's the word on the street right now. Her performance is iconic. She's Aunt Em as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Melody Betts, I believe, is playing Evelyn.
Betts.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Heard she's iconic.
All right. It's like, well, listeners, petition New York State and say, please give us the crossover of our dreams.
Yes. Give us crossover content. That's all I ever want.
The Wiz was my mom's first show and Wicked was my first show. And so we loved, and like her love for The Wiz is like my love for Wicked. So we bonded.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Oh my gosh. You guys have to have a day, a Broadway day.
So I'm so excited.
Yeah, that would
be never. She's never seeing Wicked again. She told me that very, very in clear words that she's never seeing Wicked again because I talk about it.
Oh, she's like, all those times braiding your hair and you made me watch the movie.
She's done. I forced her to see it when we went to London this summer and she was like, I will never.
I will never.
Aw, I'm glad she exists though, because there are people who are like, I don't need to do this. I'm like, that's fine. That's their truth.
But that's okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So funny.
We're not friends with them. No, just kidding.
We'll see you in sexy times.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Can't wait to see you in Sexy Times, listeners. Woo-hoo! Thank you again, Brie. See you next time.
Have a good one.
Thank you so much for listening to Down the Yellow Brick Pod. We love linking arms with listeners like you.
Another special thank you to our Patreon Pod Squad members who have become our Bellina soup for the soul. You get it. And Oz family all across the globe. Consider joining us for as low as $3 a month. Patreon linked in show notes. More tiers and perks coming soon.
You can also find us over on IG at Down the Yellow Brick Pod and someday TikTok, and dropping Good Trouble Witch merch like it's hot on our Etsy shop. All links below. Shout out to our logo designer, Maddie Frank, for helping us make Oz nerddom fashion.
We'd like to dedicate this season to the late great co-host Drew of neighboring podcast Of Slippers and Spindles, whose fairy tale enthusiasm always inspired ours. Blessed to have connected on Oz and Wicked and to have known you, Drew.
And lastly, if you are feeling the pod and haven't already, consider leaving us an Apple review. It truly makes our day. Each review also equals an entry into our big blowout end of the season giveaway. You won't want to miss this one, which will be completely swankified.
As always, all previous reviews will also be considered in our entries. We got you, boo.
See you over the rainbow soon.
In a clock tick.